morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night, wherever in the world. Welcome to another episode of Endurance Chat. Today, we are talking Petit Le Mans, we are talking Fuji, we are talking IMSA Laguna Seca, and we're talking ELMS's qualifying champs. And to start off with all the stuff on the American side of things, I have with me Cookie Monster Rafael. How are you going today, Cookie Monster Rafael?
I am an American, and I'm doing well.
Hello, Australian man. Actually, I'm doing heaps good. It's been a good week. But one of the reasons it's been a good week is because this week, coming up, we have Petit Le Mans and the 6 hours of Fuji. Now, I know it sucks that they're on the same weekend, but dude, how hype are you for Petit Le Mans?
Petit is going to be great. Nothing a hurricane won't subdue for the race, I think. So we'll have a cool, slightly warm during the day, but cold at night Petit. Then it'll be dry. All the fans will just be pretty exhausted from having to battle a tropical storm as it barrels through. So... I'm looking forward to that race in particular.
Because you're going to be there. How long is it until you leave to go towards Petit Le Mans?
Hour and a half, I think.
Nice. Yeah, so we got this in about, just in time. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Seven and a half hour drive. I'll be hanging out at a friend's place in Atlanta, and then we're going to drive over tomorrow. I don't know. Well, depending on how the storm starts looking, yep. But... beyond that, yeah. And then, too, we've got some ability to watch the race. We've got some projectors and things that we're going to try to throw up on a blank white wall somewhere and try to watch the Fuji race, too.
So. Awesome. That'll be sick. Hopefully you get in the Discord and hopefully you record something down at the track for us, because that would be, oh yes, that would be very sweet if you could do
that. That's the plan.
But before we talk more about Petit, let's talk back about the last round of the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Series at Laguna Seca. Now, I'm just going to preface this by saying that, by gosh, this race had some of the worst driver standards I've ever seen in my entire life of watching sports cars. But damn, it turned into a good race once we got out the way, eh?
Yeah. In order for the insane finish to happen, we basically needed all the field to self-destruct every about 15 minutes or so. And wow, yeah, we completely saw that happen at Mazda Laguna Seca. Oh, no, it's not Mazda anymore.
It's not Mazda. It's WeatherTech Raceway.
Oh, no, it's WeatherTech. You know, it's one of those title sponsors that I can ever remember.
Yeah.
I'll just call it Laguna Seca. How about that?
Is that
fine?
That's good. Or Monterey. Monterey is also good.
Yeah, we could do that too. Yeah. But you're crazy. For Prototype, for GTLM, for GTD, there is craziness that happened throughout the entire race at the start. I mean, it was just championship implications throughout the entire race.
Yeah.
And lots of heartbreak. So yeah, it pretty much covered the entire gamut of a huge 24-hour race, but it only happened in about 2 hours, 40 minutes.
40 minutes, yeah, one tenth of that time. So let's talk about the start, or rather let's talk about the start that happened before the start. Literally before the friggin' race had even gotten underway, we had cars checking up, coming down the main straight, running into the back of each other, and then it was at the five that stopped had the Ford GT ramp basically over its rear wheel and then collided with the Porsche, and just that's how the race started before the green flag had even gone.
Yep, which then also meant that the five didn't even score any points whatsoever this entire round.
It got listed as a did not start, which for an IMSA competition, that kills you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I mean, and that took them, what, from, were they P2 in the championship to now they're P6? Or were they lead? I don't think they were leading the championship to start, but they were right there in title contention. Yeah, they didn't even get anything.
They were definitely in the hunt. The gap now for them is... Assuming that's the right car. It is now something like 30 points. And if they just started the race, they would have gotten 18 at least. So that was a big, big lose. Like bloody hell. But yeah, took out the number 66 and the number 911 as well. Both of those managed to cross the start line, so they got scored with championship points. But that was what the first 20 minutes of the race was. It was just circulating around after that. And we finally got the safety car lights out. We finally looked like we were going to get ready to go again. And then one of the Lexuses spun out of the last corner on the restart, got smashed by the number 93 Acura, and then tagged again by the 96 BMW. And then we were under caution for another 15 minutes.
And yeah, so first 40 minutes of the 2 hour, 40 minute race, all safety car and really no racing whatsoever.
No, literally zero racing.
Yeah, and we saw, I mean, and again, really was what exactly what Wade Tether Racing wanted. They were starting P1 and had pretty much ran a little bit away from the field, you know, for the first half of each green flag lap that we had. But then once we got back underway, it they kind of were taking a little bit more control of the race. I think it settled down a bit. And then they had some gearbox problems.
Yeah, so. it was a good maybe 40 minutes after that that they put ground to a halt heading up into the corkscrew. Let's just that had championship implications in itself, and then that caused a safety car as well. I want to backtrack a little bit and talk about what happened at the actual start of green flag running. Now, there's two things I want to talk about. Firstly, the Core Autosports team, Jonathan Bennett, looked like they were slowing into pit lane and looked like there was some sort of drama or something, and then they crossed the pit lane line and then we never heard anything wrong with that car again. Why did that happen, Cookie?
They were trying to get in the minimum time spent for Bennett to get out of the car. So he met his minimum drive time. So they were literally just sitting at the end, at the entrance of pit lane for like almost 2 minutes.
If it had been 2 minutes, they would have gone a lap down. I think it was only about 20 or 30 seconds, but it felt like a long time.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I think they had just, they squeaked it by like seconds. Like I think he had 3 to 4 seconds in the good and they got the car stopped.
I mean, how good is that though for Core, having your amateur driver in a pro-am class do literally all of their laps under caution? Like, okay. Yeah. That would have been a pretty shit way to have be a race for Bennett. Like, oh, well, I'm just circulating under caution. But for the team, that is pretty damn good.
Well, I mean, you know, from the aspect of, you know, a gentleman driver, silver driver, and wanting to potentially win the race and do well in the championship. I mean, they're all, the whole goal for them is to win the championship. And I think in order to do that, you have to get the least competent driver out of the car, not anything away from John Bennett, but, he's not super fast and that call needed to be done regardless. So fortunately for him, he didn't get the joys of being scared to death as really pro drivers fly by around him. But as a fan of the International P2s, I wholeheartedly support their decision to do something crazy like that and wait the minimum amount of time and bring him in. So that was a really neat strategy call that I don't think I've ever seen in a long time.
It reminds me of the year that Ed Brown did one lap under safety car to win the Daytona 24 hour in 2016 or 2015.
It
reminded me of that. It was like that sort of like, oof, that's some quality strategy. And it worked out for them, but we'll get to that a little later. The second thing I wanted to talk about was Catherine Legg started on pole, dropped down to fourth after the two restart shenanigans. Do you think that was just a bit of caution on Catherine's part? Because remember, that car, the 86 car, is deep in the championship fight as well.
Yes, absolutely. I think they were just trying to keep it safe. I mean, too, and there could just be times where you get shuffled out and you don't get the amount of grip. Maybe the tires weren't as warm. There was some clag on it. I'm not sure. But, I mean, there's just a – unfortunately, with GTLM, GTD, all this, is that the pace is so close is that you can't really afford to drop that many positions at the beginning. It's just that much tougher to pass them at the end. Granted, we saw a ton of passing throughout the tire race. It looked like it was pretty, not easy to pass, but if you were a faster car, you had opportunities to get around.
And that's one of the things that is just typical of Laguna Seca. It's one of my favorite tracks in the world because, like, the way that cars move around here is just fantastic. I'm jealous. I wish I lived in Monterey, California, just to go to that racetrack. That's actually a lie. I love where I live. But still, if they could bring that track to me, that would be, like, the best thing.
It's close to your kind of climate and whatnot, right? I mean, California, yeah. Southern California, not too far off.
Yeah, pretty much.
You get nice more rain, summers,
but... a bit of rain. Yeah, that's not too bad.
Yeah.
Wouldn't mind it. Wouldn't be the worst.
Yeah.
Moving on. So Wayne Taylor Racing, we mentioned, had that problem, took them out of the race. drop them basically out of championship contention now. Caused a safety car. That was at about an hour 57 or an hour. Yeah, so still a lot of racing time left. The thing was, it was right at the point where you'd be tossing up between two stints to the finish or one stint to the finish. And I think because of that, we saw a lot of different strategy plays. And as it shook out, Mazda finished up in the lead of the race.
Right. Yeah. And the pace was good. Which
it was astounding.
Right. Usually the pace is good and there's some more mire in the back because of mechanical issues or the pace, you know, they're up front, but they have no pace and their strategy is completely different. So
they're up front and they lose out in the pits because their pit crew is crap. But that hasn't happened since they were with Yost.
Uh-huh. Yes, yeah. That.
But then what happened?
All the negatives.
Well, then what happened?
Well, then what happened? We had the number two suffer the ESM. I believe they suffered a turbo failure. Was it an engine failure, which took them out?
It was something. They were in a really good position as well, which was a shame.
And then we also had the GTLM, not points lead. No, was it the 67 went off track mysteriously at turn three, the right-hander. It looked like he was going to have make contact with the Porsche, or was it Corvette? Might have been Corvette or Porsche.
Yeah.
Was on the outside and then just pretty much lost the ability to turn right. And I think there was something wrong with that car because it also then went to behind the wall.
Yeah, I think there was I'm recalling back now, but I think it was a suspension problem and they actually had to take that car in behind the wall. And that all but killed Ford's serious attempt at the championship this year. With Corvette getting another decent result, kind of puts Ford out of contention. I mean, it's 9 points, which doesn't sound like much, but with the way that the IMSA point scale is, it's just a bit too tough.
That's for drivers, right?
No, for manufacturers as well.
Really? I thought they locked manufacturers up. I guess they did not.
Yeah, no, you're right. They do have manufacturers, but in terms of trying to challenge for the team, the number three car has a 9 point lead over the number 67. So
yeah. Yeah, you're going to have them not start the race.
Pretty much,
and then have
to
win it. But yeah, I think what you were referring to was the flash. Woo. Flash. Woo. Yak attack.
Yes. So, for those who haven't seen it, you should go back and watch it because it was quite a turning moment in the race. But Harry Tinknell, while leading the race, about 10-second lead at this point with about 20 minutes left to go in the race. He's come up behind Gustavo Yackerman in the PR1 Matheson car, has dived down the inside from about 3 or 4 car lengths back into turn 4 or 5 or however. You guys have weird numbers for your corners in America.
I can't tell either.
It's like the turn before the kink into the corkscrew, that turn. And Yuckerman either hasn't seen him or has and just hasn't cared and has turned down. They've made contact and Harry Tinknell spun out in the Mazda, dropped 5 positions and then went on to finish, I think, 5th in that race. And
4th.
4th, sorry. But it's just like, man, Mazda, like, how can you keep throwing away these results? Mazda, please.
I mean, like, you know, like our friends over at Sports Car, the weekly podcast, but Pruitt and Goodwin,
yes,
like they had said, I think this is really a Harry Tinknell issue, and this is probably one of the first times that Mazda didn't win the race when they should have, that it wasn't necessarily a Mazda, because I think Mazda did everything right. They and I mean even AFS PR1 Matheson knew that the leader was coming up and had informed Yackerman that they indeed were coming up. But again, it's wildcard Yackerman, and you have no idea what you're going to get.
Yeah.
And we've seen it time and again. I think that car had turned around too earlier in the race. Made contact with a GTD car.
Had gotten penalized for avoidable contact. Yep.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't. There might have been 3 races this year, 2 races that they've actually had a clean race and not actually touched anything other than, you know, the pit crew. Even then, but that was a bond. That was probably the most bonsai move I've seen in a long time from Harry.
Yeah,
that was so far back.
It really was. That was a thing that I think really kind of confused me is that he didn't need to make that move. They had a comfortable buffer. They had the pace. And you're coming up on one of the most unpredictable guys in the field. I would have expected that you would have just waited until you had a clearer opportunity. But I think, I guess it's one of those things that with Mazda, it's going to get worse until it gets better. And I don't mean that in terms of like, oh, their results are just going to get shit forever. It's more like it's been so long that since they've had a win with this program. They haven't had a win with this program, in fact. So when they get into these positions, they don't know how to win, if that makes sense. You know, they get into these race-winning positions and then everyone seizes up and tenses up and it all becomes really sort of heavy breathing, adrenaline pumpings, the red mist sort of comes down because they haven't closed out a race result like that for a while. So it might be that, you know, they need to get a win under the belt just to go, oh, okay, we can do this. We know how to do this now. That makes sense?
Yeah. I mean, there's a bunch of combinations for this. And I think it's just it's misfortune. It's just bad placement, bad timing. I mean, for everybody saying that they had it locked, I mean, I think they had more pace in the car, and I think they were just kind of tending to what they needed to do with 20 minutes to go. They had a 10-second lead. Now, granted, that started off with a 17-second lead, and Pippo was driving like a madman, but, you know, obviously not making contact with other cars. And so that might have been even a little bit closer, and they might have had to put a little bit more juice into the motor at the end of the race there. But beyond that, it was still, it was just such an alarming gap. That's an iRacing move. And I was just expecting somebody to jump on the radio and be like, what are you doing? What's going on? Like, what are you, where do you get your driver? What's your iRating or something like that? That was a sim racing move right there. Of somebody that's just like, I need to get through.
Speaking of iRacing, you can race against Cookie Monster FL on iRacing if that sounds like something you would fancy.
Subscribe today, $4.99 a month. Now I don't know what the price is anymore. But shout out to iRacing.
Yeah, but what that did mean, though, as you mentioned, Pipo Duranic came through, whizzed through the rest of the field, and ended up winning for the ESM Patron team, which, honestly, given the current state of affairs with ESM saying that they're pulling out of the sport, of sponsoring, and the entire flux around what's going to happen with the Nissan next year, it's really good for the team to get that sort of win.
2 points of note. This might be Johannes van Overbeek's last overall win, or just last win in general for sports car racing since his retirement announcement.
Yep.
And two, this car had spun out after the second safety car came in, and it was green flag, got taken. It got hit, I think, by a GTLM or somebody. No, it might have been a prototype.
I feel like the two ESM cars, or that car, and I think it might have been Montoya, were trying to pass a GTLM car, and that's where everything just kind of got a bit screwy.
So they were behind the eight ball just by obviously losing all those positions, spinning out, and then kind of almost having to wait for most of the field to get through. So the comeback for them was pretty startling to see.
Yeah. It's just one of those Pipo drives where you're just like, damn, that guy is just good.
Hero laps every single time, and he's not making a mistake. Which then follows up. So they win. What? That's just crazy. No one expected that. I mean, after two cars that could have absolutely won the race with Wayne Taylor Racing and Mazda, and then P2 ends up being the Core Autosport entry. Getting around both the Acura Team Penske DPIs at the end of the race, in which you would have just assumed that that wasn't possible.
And let's not forget their championship contender in the 31 as well. Brown, in that last stint, he was phenomenal. The lap times he was producing were just crazy.
Yep, fastest lap time. But he also was assisted in this P2 by the number 7 Team Penske Acura, hitting a GTD. Or was it? Oh, man, I cannot remember who they hit. It was two GTD Porsches, I believe, that got wide in turn one or two or whatever the first major left turn is. Still don't know those numbers. And they went wide. He went for the inside. Ricky Taylor did, and they came right back on him and clipped him on his right rear, and I believe broke the suspension.
Yeah,
and they done for the number 7, just like that too. You got, that's more it's not necessarily championship point implications, but they were still fighting for a decent championship finish and a decent result, because that team has also had some really bad luck this year. So, that was another this race is just cranked up to 11 now.
Yeah.
And, I mean, just, This all just happens within like a 10-minute span. There's just something going on with the championship.
It was,
and
it
we
was,
haven't even talked about GTD either.
We'll talk about GTD in a sec. But as far as action-packed races, after you got through that first 40 minutes of yellow flag running, it was actually a pretty damn good race. So, And thank you to everyone in the Discord who joined me for Cooking with Floodman. That was a good time. If we ever get any more long full-course yellows, I'll do another episode. Were you in there for that? Were you in the Discord for that?
I heard about it. Yeah. I was not in the Discord for it, but I heard about Cooking with Floodman.
Moving on. The GTLM race turned into a bit of a fuel battle at the end because of the end of the previous full course yellow kind of being right on the border between being able to make it home on one stint. And it looked like the German boys brought it home with that extra fuel economy. So it was Alex Sims and Conor DeFilippi in the 25 taking home another win for BMW RLL. Great work there for the M8, Australia's favorite car.
The big boy mate.
Another big boy Beamer meme as well, coming over the crest of turn one. Great, fantastic stuff. And it was the number 912 of Earl Bam Bam and Lawrence Vantor in second position, only 3 seconds further back, which was a pretty good race for them. And then further afield, it was a lot of guys who looked like they had to take more stops, so or really, really conserve fuel. So the number 3 finished third, then the 24 that did have to take another stop, and then the number 4. Interestingly, no Fords out of that group.
Yeah, all of them suffering issues, and that's who, you know, and they were saying potential fuel run for GTLM after that safety car, and so you were almost just penciling in one of the Fords or both of them to be on the podium. Just because of how insane their fuel savings is.
Westbrook here in 2016, the first win for the Ford GT, where he did like an hour and 10 minutes on a single tank.
It was like a two-stop race or something.
It was meant to be a two-stop race, and he didn't one stop. Him and Briscoe. Mm-hmm. It was like, man, what the hell? BMW here actually played the smart thing where they split the strategies. They actually had one car go hell for leather and burn up all the fuel and then take the stop, and then had the other car conserve. And it turned out that the conservation strategy was the one to go with.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was just a page out of Ford's book, and being able to stretch it that long, I don't think anybody really thought that they could do it. So, you know, hats off to them. And again, the second win for the team.
Back-to-back.
Yeah. So they're starting to find their stride. It's a good time before you head into Petit.
Petit would be great. Now, we're going to skip over the GTLM battle because it wasn't... Like, GTLM was, you know, normal GTLM levels are good, but as far as GTD goes, now that was a fantastic race. Absolutely fantastic.
You had the championship implications, but they just had racecraft and race and just the actual racing that was taking place throughout the entire event was crazy.
The difference in tire strategy as well really, really made for a fantastic finish at the end, because you saw guys like the number 48 Paul Miller Racing Lamborghini and the number 33 Riley and the number 73 Park Place Motorsports Porsche come in pit early, do that long fuel stint at the end, maybe looking for a safety car, and trying to, you know, stretch out the tire life. And then on the flip side, you had guys like the number 86, the Acura of Leg and Parent, put on the tires late and then try and burst through the field. And we just had this beautiful back and forth between guys coming through and guys trying to hold on. It made it for an absolute classic finish, again, with championship implications.
I mean, I think the team that really played the strategy almost perfectly and almost won it was Park Place, with, you know, having York have to really take on fuel and manage the tires as well as they did. You could tell that the tires were falling off and that he was definitely holding the pack up, but he still managed out a P2 place for GTD at the end of it all, and really only let one car get through.
Yeah, and I think people were surprised by how sharply they all dropped off. I think that was the really defining thing, because if you look at the sort of, I don't have the full list of lap times here, but you can go find it. All three of those top four cars that weren't on the top step, So the Park Place car, the number 73, oh, sorry, that is the Park Place, the 33 and the 48, they all started dropping off massively at the same time. They were doing laps like 2 or 3 seconds a lap slower than the guys like Parent, who managed to clear them. But that battle at the end for the minor steps of the podium, it was ridiculous how close they all got. It again, reminded me of VIR, where you had a string of five cars all on different strategies going bumping each other off and all that sort of stuff. And Parent just kind of came through, was just like, okay, well, I'm just going to let you guys move each other out the way, and I'm just going to see you later. See you on the podium, guys.
Oh, Nico Hülkenberg there. Nice.
Yeah. But yeah, seriously though, drive of the day, Alvaro Parent, like, he was unstoppable in that last stint.
Yeah, he was flying by people. And especially when, like I said, the pace is so close with these GT cars, GT3 cars, that you would not expect the amount of overtake. I mean, there was beating and banging that was happening, you know, throughout the race, just in terms of getting that position. But I mean,
It looked like we were watching British touring cars.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In the late 90s, too. And it was just like, yeah, you're going to go ahead and just hit him. So, and then take him out, and you'll just take the position.
Yeah,
that was a crazy time.
Robin is racing, ain't that right?
Hey, we're in America, so
exactly
this is,
right.
This is a given. Insurance companies hate us. So.
But in the end, that battle group actually went. If you're an Acura fan or Catherine Legg fan or Alvaro Parent fan, that back ended up perfectly for the number 86's championship. So they won the race, taking home maximum points, and then the Brian Sellers Madison Snow car finished at the bottom of that pack. And that pack was only separated by less than a second in total. So the fact that they got boxed out and finished fourth, big championship implications, so much so. We'll talk about it a bit later on if Cookie's got time. If not, I'll just talk about it later on. But damn, just damn.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was about the best weekend you could have for the 86 without the 48 having some problem. Obviously, with their second win of the year and the 48 not finishing on the podium, you close that gap considerably to where you could easily win this. I mean, you know, and it's not going to have to be we have to win and they have to finish ninth in class.
Yeah.
So points bred through Petit will be looked at meticulously through the hours, and I'm sure at the end of the race we'll be talking about who's still going to win it, because we're not sure. One thing I want to point out too, GTD is pretty level right now. I just don't know how you could possibly say that there's one manufacturer that's really taking it. Looking at the final make order here for GTD, we've got Acura, Porsche, Mercedes, Lamborghini, Audi, Ferrari, and Lexus. That was the finishing order.
Yeah,
so I mean, every single make, yeah, is a different make, and I mean the depth of field is just crazy. I wish we had more of these cars, but having this many cars and having them this close is fantastic.
Yeah, exactly right. Nice. Just wait until Cooper McNeil goes, oh no, this BOP is not fair, so I'm going to go buy an Acura because that's currently winning the championship,
or a Bentley. Give me a Bentley.
Someone
keeps bringing in other cars. Just keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll wrap up Laguna Seca there, and let's talk ahead now to Petit Le Mans. So, how excited are you to go? How many Petit Le Mans would this be for you now?
This will be number 4. 15, 16, 17, 18. Yeah, 4. This will be 4.
Awesome. And how do you guys do it? I know you guys camp there, right? You're doing it with the Atlians, is that right?
Yes. Yeah. About there's gonna be 4 to 5 of us there. We'll be hopefully getting there around Wednesday, Thursday, depending on how this weather looks, because we do have a hurricane or a cyclone if you're on the other side of the world. That is developing in the Gulf of Mexico, and it's supposed to hit the Florida Panhandle, which is a little sliver of Florida on the left, and work its way up through Georgia, which is, you know, and we'll get close to Atlanta and Braselton, Georgia, where the Motul Petit Le Mans is held.
Yep.
So we'll definitely be getting some rain. So it'll be a question of whether or not we set everything up, or just set something up, or we just throw a huge blue tarp over everything and run.
So is it going to be like it was in 2016, do you reckon?
2015. And God, no. We've already talked about a contingency plan for what we do if it gets to be like that. We're just leaving. We're going home and watching the race from home. That was horrible. Now, granted, that was probably the least prepared or the least stuff that we had. We had like a 10 by 10 foot canopy that housed like 8 people, and we had like a fire pit that was like in the center of it, because that was the only place that you could put fire, because there was just sleet, rain, like sideways the entire weekend.
Damn.
So yeah, it was utterly, I would say that was probably one of the most miserable experiences I've had at a sporting event. I still enjoyed it, but it was like this is not enjoyable. And I flew down there, so I didn't even have a car. So like I had all my stuff and again, I wasn't thinking too, so I threw like my backpack in the tent. I'm like, all right, well, that'll stay dry. It did not.
Nope.
We had a couple of cars that we were using. We could have just put all of our stuff in the car, and at least that would have kept it dry. But no, we put everything in the tents, and it was just...
Rookie mistake.
It was bad. But this year, it shouldn't be as bad. Friday looks great. Saturday looks great. So, I mean, the whole system will have pushed out of the area by Friday morning. So,
yep. And the Petit Le Mans, is it on a Saturday night or a Saturday into night, or is it Sunday?
Yes, Saturday into night. Okay. So it's, yep. And then so we'll have, after that, we'll have Fuji.
Yep, 1 hour of time in between, and then it'll be 6 hours of Fuji. We're looking at a few extra entries, of course, being the last round of the season and the last round of the NAEC. I think we have Performance Tech jumping back in. Yes. James French, Kyle Masson. PR1 Matheson has actually gotten rid of Gustavo Yakerman for this race, so the Yak Attack will not be coming back.
Unfortunate.
Oh, I know, right? Just hope that they don't end up like over the tires again like they did last year, because that wouldn't be enjoyable.
that was an obnoxious race.
Yeah. We're not seeing any international P2 guys, unfortunately. It doesn't look like that, which is a shame.
Would love to see Rebellion.
It would. Oh, man. Rebellion, P2, Valianti colors. That would have been fantastic. I actually think that was the only new car, the return of the number 38.
29.
29 as well?
Land Motorsports returning.
Oh, yeah, cool. No Kelvin Vandalind, though, which is a bit of a shame.
No, I don't know what that's about, but they will be a contender for the win for sure.
Yep.
That's,
and also, something else I'm seeing, number 71, P1 Motorsports, Mercedes, JC Perez, Felipe Fraga, and Maximilian Buch, which would be a very interesting sort of
Maxi
thing.
Maxi Buch. Petit. Yeah. I'm excited for that. That's going to be interesting.
He is so short, by the way. Like, he looks like... like exactly as you would imagine, like a young blonde German guy to look, exactly like Maxi Buch.
I don't know of a young blonde German guy that's short. So
okay,
they're all usually pretty tall.
Yeah, well now you'll meet Maxi
Buch. No, I do.
No doubt at like the freaking shops or something next to Derek.
You've opened my eyes to German.
anyway, one of the interesting things about this race, of course, being around the NAEC, is that we have an extra co-driver. So I'm just looking through this list here. I'm seeing guys like Wolf Hensler in the 73 for Park Place, Mario Farnbacher in one of the Acuras.
Lucas Stoltz,
yep. That would be with Riley. Is that right? Yep.
Yeah, it's with Riley, yeah.
Robert Renauer with the Riot Motorsports team. But the guy that I am most excited to see race this weekend is number 24, Chaz Mostert. You have no idea who I'm talking about, do you?
No, I know who Chaz is. I thought, wasn't he supposed to do...
Yeah,
no, that was...
it was Jamie Wincup that was meant to do Laguna.
Jamie Wincup. Yeah. Okay. Wow. I did not even realize that he got the third ride for the...
Yeah, because the other endurance drivers are going to be over in Fuji.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
That would make sense.
So you're going to see some really interesting names and some really cool drivers. So, yeah, keep an eye out for Chaz Mostert, everyone listening, because he's an absolute lad. He's going to have a lot of fun in that car.
I'm going to try to meet him.
Oh, definitely, dude.
Tell him of the legend of Flood, man.
I actually haven't met him yet, so you're going to meet him ahead of me, maybe.
How did he do it at the 1,000?
He finished in the 10. I think he finished 4th. Bathurst 1,000 spoilers, by the way, guys. But he had a run-in with a teammate, so it was kind of a 4th, but also... Yes. How cool is Road Atlanta as a track?
It is an undulating terrain of Georgia clay. And it has some points that I would say are potentially even steeper than Road America, which is saying a lot. That track is a crazy elevation changes too, but Road Atlanta just kind of just goes, all right, well, we're not even going to do any modifications at all to the track or to the terrain. We're just going to put a track here.
Yeah.
And if there's a massive hill, there's just a massive hill. So congratulations. Like that's the fun part about Road Atlanta. That's different than a lot of tracks is that it's not like it even seeks out the hills. It doesn't care. It just is like, okay, here's where the track is. So have fun. And it's a blast to watch it at so many different spots.
It's on the bucket list. I might actually even try and get out there next year because I've been racing on Sims since I got Forza 1 back in like 2005. And man, it's just been one of my favorite tracks to race cars out in Sims and to watch as well. It's amazing. I just love looking like the shot looking down the S's during the night. It's just gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous.
Yep, and you got a full hill, spectator hill, pretty much that you can watch that from. So you can just watch them as they weave down through the S's and then come up through that hard left. So yeah, I mean, you could just pull up a chair and sit there and watch it. It's great. It's fantastic.
So next year when I'm coming up and staying with you, that's where we're gonna sit.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. We'll take you all the spots. I mean, one of my favorite ones too is the last over the tunnel hill and or the bridge hill or whatever you want to call it. And coming down to that right, you could stand on the left side of that bridge, and there's some hospitality units that are there, and those stupid security guys will just always go like, "Oh, can't stand there," and you literally will just shift like 5 feet over to the right on the fence, and they're like, "Okay, you're good." And you're like, "What?" Like they want to keep open sight lines for like the four guys that are using the BMW hospitality. No, the hospitality tent's closed. I don't even know why they're not letting people there. Unless it's just for like, we're going to make sure that the sight lines are open for the race. And so we're going to have to do this for all the practice sessions. Whatever. That's my rant. but you could stand there. Right. And watch the cars as they fly over and then pretty much bottom out and then make that right hander. But you're so close. And like all the cars are just flying over that. That's one of my favorite spots to stand. And it's just like right. There's like a small area to stand there too for it. So you always see somebody standing there taking pictures or videos.
Yeah.
It's a great spot. There's so many good amazing.
Honestly, parts of the undulation remind me of Bathurst. Just looking at it, it looks like you can get some just like where the elevation of the track just does all the work for you. And you can just stand there and just watch it be beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Beautiful. Speaking of, you're going to get down to Bathurst one day. Do it.
Oh, yeah. I need to get upside down world at some point.
Absolutely. It's the best way to live. Anyway, do we want to do predictions? Predictions for Petit Le Mans.
All right, yeah, let's do them. Let's try to do this.
Yep.
Championship or just race?
Let's go with the race. I'll talk about the championship a bit later because I know that you've got shit you got to do.
Okay. So my packing needs to continue.
Yeah. Race prediction. I think the number 22 is going to do very, very well. I reckon number 22 will be my first pick, and then the number 54, core auto sports team. And then it's a toss-up between, I reckon the number 77 is actually pretty good as well, because we've seen the global P2 format do well here at the past. So they're my picks, 22, 54, 77.
It's just, this is a great field. I just don't know. I don't even know if I could pick like maybe a podium, and 54 is in there. I'm gonna say the 77 too, and I'll go. I'll say 31.
31. See, yeah. The thing that turned me off 31 is that I'm not familiar with the name Gabby Chavez. I don't know who that is. Whereas
he is an IndyCar driver.
Okay,
he's pretty good. He's not like legendary, but just something about. I just feel like a Cadillac is going to win this race, okay. And I don't know. It's either going to be 31, 5. I don't. Maybe the 10, but I just have a feeling that it's going to be a Cadillac that wins it.
Okay,
but I would love to see the 54 or 77 just kill people.
Definitely. Not
murder.
Yeah.
I meant physical murder. I want they just jump out of the car and just start shanking.
I forgot you're American. The thing that's really turning the 22 and the 54 for me is that look at the third drivers that they're picking up. Timo Bernhard, Romain Dumas. Number two is grabbing Norman Nato, who's had a fantastic year in the ELMS. Big props to Norman Nato. And 77's getting Luca Degrassi. So they're not, it's an embarrassment of riches in those few drivers.
Yeah. I it's so hard to go against, like, yeah, looking at that third driver, you're almost like, is that where they're going to pick up the, and that's where too, again, the 31 has an IndyCar driver that really no one's heard of. He's not a legendary prototype driver.
Mm.
So you can kind of go, eh. And then obviously with the Penske drivers, you know, they're picking up a IndyCar champion with Simon Pagenaud, and they've got, you can, however you want to say, Graham Rahal, but he's got a lot of prototype experience.
Yep.
And has been racing prototypes for the last like 10, 11 years. 12 years. So, I mean, it's just kind of like, what are you have so much to choose from. And I think, is the 10 doing only a two-driver lineup? Or do they have an unconfirmed third?
Listed here, Renger van der Zand, Jordan Taylor, and Ryan Hunter-Reay on my entry list that I'm looking at.
There you go.
Yeah. I'm just going to throw in just a curveball. Reckon 99, Red Dragon might have a good result here as well. If they have a race anywhere near the standard they had at Road America, they'll be in with a fight.
I would love to see Steven Simpson up there battling everybody else. You know, it's just going to be interesting to see if Misha does anything of merit to pretty much keep them in contention up until the last couple hours when they put Steven back in.
Yeah, or is he going to goik it up? Just goiking it up. Moving on. GTLM. We got Porsches. We got BMWs. We got a Ricci. Ricci's back for this race. We got Ford. We got Corvette. Go.
You know what? I'm gonna pick with my heart. I'm gonna go 62 to win it because the BOP has never been able to even calculate how good the Ferrari could be.
Yep.
So we'll just say Ferrari just has a huge leg up over everybody and wins it. No, I think probably the 20. I'm thinking it's going to be a BMW. They're going to take the going to get a hat trick of the year to finish it out in a row.
Cool, yeah.
They've always seemed to be really strong at this track, even with the M6. Mm. So I'm going to go 24.
Yeah, because, Chaz.
To get Chaz a win.
Yeah, boy.
We'll go 67 for P2, and then I'll go 9-11 for P3. And again, that's ignoring all of Corvette.
Yeah.
So. I don't know how accurate this is going
to
be.
Corvette to me just seems that they're always there, but they're never like there. You know, they'll get a solid result and they'll bring home the championship, but they're not going to take away stonking race wins.
And here's where they prove you wrong, right?
Yeah,
here at this
pretty
race.
Much.
Right.
Yeah. This is just an endurance chat, you know, like special here. It's just like we're going to make these predictions that's just going to be all wrong. So I'm actually going to say 9-12, like Bam Bam and Vantor, like damn. And they're adding Matteo Jaminet to that car, a French Carrera Cup or Carrera GT or something driver. Really quality guy. I think he also races in either the ELMS or the Michelin Le Mans Cup. It's definitely a name that I'm aware of and definitely a name that I know has been doing some good stuff. 24 because Strayer. And I actually am going to chuck in the 62. That driver lineup with Ricci just looks mental.
Yeah, the Bertolini, Wielander, and you kidding me, right?
Exactly. Just quickly on the Porsches, heritage livery for them, running the GT GT198 liveries from Le Mans. My God, like.
Well, it's the 20th anniversary for the Petit Le Mans too, and that's the 911 GT1s that they ran there also had that livery as well. So,
yeah.
But holy cow.
They're just so gorgeous. Porsche just killing it. Absolutely killing it.
Yeah. How can you say not?
Now, finally, GTD, is it even worth trying?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Quick question.
Yeah.
Just to recap, my entry list has the 3 and 4 with the third driver being Marcel Fassler. Okay, so can you update me on who is the third driver for either the 3 or 4 that isn't Marcel Fassler?
It's Marcel Fassler.
So he's going to be dueling the both Corvettes here? Is that what's going on?
I mean, you are allowed to do that. You are allowed to drive in both cars. It's just you have to nominate which one you're going to score points for before you race. Mm-hmm. So
okay. we don't need no sixth driver.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Fassler.
Who would they get? Like, why isn't Rockefeller in those cars anyway?
2007 Le Mans, or is it 2009? I don't know. Just what? the horror show of the last 2 hours and him bidding the R10. I think it's still throwing him fits.
10 years later.
10 years later.
Okay, GTD predictions. Be brave.
29 to win it. 86 with a P2 podium, and I'll go 48 with P3, giving 40 at the championship.
Ooh, okay.
I would love 86 to win it, though. Oh, God, would I love 86 to win the championship.
I am just salivating at the idea of, like, Patrick Long, Christina Nielsen, and Robin Renauer having a good result. Because Renauer is one of my favorite, like, low-tier drivers. That's probably a bit mean to Renauer, but he's not really ever raced anything that's been super-duper top-tier. And when he did, it broke on him on the warm-up lap at Daytona. So, poor dude. I actually think 29, 33, and 86 is going to be the podium, because you just can't count out Ben Keating, like, at all.
Yeah. And they've got a good lineup too for that. And I think they've had some decent results before.
Yeah.
At other too.
Speaking of Lucas Stoltz, his driving this year has been absolutely outstanding in everything that he's touched. So keep an eye out whenever he's in the car, because that thing will be a rocket. Absolute rocket. I think that brings us to the end of our petite preview. Just one final thing.
Yeah.
20 years of Petit Le Mans. And also it'll be the first Petit Le Mans without Don Panos, as he sadly passed away about a month ago now. And of course he basically revived sports car racing around the world, he also bought Road Atlanta as well, and, you know, instilled the American Le Mans series, created this event. Did a lot of work with the Delta Wing, and then his own project beforehand with the Esperante. How is that going to change the sort of atmosphere around the race for this year?
I think people will be mentioning it, and obviously it'll be brought up a bit on the PA, certainly. I think there will be a lot of remembrance, and it's due. He has done a lot for that track, the event, the series, which came before this one. He bought Sebring and kept Sebring alive, sports car racing in America.
Sports car racing in general, like before the American Le Mans series was really a thing, there wasn't really that much in terms of worldwide motorsport, sports cars going on.
Yeah, you had GT1 and BPR pretty much that were actual championship series. But beyond that, ALMS was really the first one that kept a prototype GT aspect to their entire season, and it attracted P1 and P2 manufacturers to it. So, I mean, that was really the first one that you could see. Le Mans Series was sort of around, but it wasn't until the later 2000s where you started seeing that, you know, be more prominent with Audi and Peugeot and some of the GT entrants from there. But you had major manufacturer support and GT and prototype that was in ALMS, and that really was what kind of kept everything alive realistically for 10 years until you started having other series that kind of got a foothold and, you know, you could do other stuff. So yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was integral for so many things. I mean, and then the Panos company itself and the cars that they came out with too, you know, there'll be tributes. We were talking about maybe doing some tributes too. So we'll see if we have time, and if the hurricane impedes our ability to get out to the track Wednesday, we'll probably make a few more tributes, and we'll throw them on the sub. Hopefully, they'll be somewhat fun yet respectful. So
that's basically our little niche, isn't it? Fun yet respectful.
Yeah. Right, exactly. We don't want to tick too many people off, but we want to have fun with it. So, but because I mean, that's all that Don was. I mean, Don wanted sports car fans to, you know, have a place, multiple places throughout the year to enjoy sports car racing in America and at least keep the passion alive with Road Atlanta and Sebring in particular. So we're going to miss him and, you know, miss his energy and miss his spirit. I know he was, you know, not feeling super well the last few years, but I think his presence was always something that, you know, was great for the event, and they'll be sorely missed.
Yep. And on that note, thank you very much, Cookie. We're going to be taking a little bit of a break now. After that, I'll talk a bit more about the IMSA Championship and how that's going to play out. And we'll look across the pond to the World Endurance Championship. Cool. We'll be back in a sec. Now let's talk a little bit about the championship picture for Petit Le Mans. Now, I'm going to admit that for a lot of the IMSA WeatherTech series, I don't really pay attention to the championship because the points confuse me. So there are a few things that we have to explain first before we get into the nitty-gritty of what's going to happen at Petit. So the first thing is that IMSA awards points for starting the race no matter where you finish it. So as long as you start the race, you're guaranteed some amount of points. Now, this is why it was such a big deal that the number 5 Action Express car was listed as a did not start for the recent Laguna Seca round, because what that meant was that it lost achieving last place points. Now, the points system in IMSA, on top of that, is really, really weird. So, for winning, you get 35 points. Then it's 32, 30, 28, 26, and then 25, 4, etc., etc., etc. Why that is, I have absolutely no idea. But what it means is that for very what appears to be large point spreads, large point totals with small spreads, actually, you've only got to move a few. You have to move a few positions before those points actually start to take meaning. It's not like, say, the WEC, where you have 25 points for a win, then 18 points for second. Those 3 or 4 point gaps are still, at the low end, 1 or 2 positions. Now, let's talk about the actual championship picture for the prototypes. So, heading into Petit Le Mans, the top team is the Eric Curran Philippe Nasser number 31 car. That is on 254 points. Now, in second place is the Colin Brown Jonathan Bennett Core Autosports car, and that is on 250 points. So that's a 4-point spread. What that means is that if Core Autosports win, the number 31 has to finish at least second to win the championship. If Quarter Sports finish second, that means the number 31 can finish as low as fourth, I think. And that would be a countback, though, because they would be tied on points. And then as you go further down, if the 54 finishes third, it would be fifth place for the 31, and then any further down than third, it would be three positions further back for the 31. So that one is actually quite tight, and with the addition of Romain Dumas for the number 54 car, I'll be honest, I am all over the Core, the hype train. I'm ready for a Core overload. This Core is going into meltdown right now. Anyone else with me? Anyone following the analogies? No? Perfect. Fantastic. Let's keep going. So that's the situation in prototype at the moment. So remember, Core Autosports wins. 31 has to finish at least second. Core Autosports second. 31 has to be fourth. Once Core finishes off the podium, Wheel and Engineering car can finish more than three places back. Now, moving on to the... We'll briefly mention GTLM. It's a 9-point gap at the top, which means that it's practically sewn up for the number 3 Corvette. For them to lose the championship, they would have to get a DNF and also have the number 67, I think, win. I think is the only way that they can actually lose the championship. If they finish sixth or better, they win the championship. There you go. Sixth or better is their goal. Now, moving on to GTD, this one is actually quite interesting. So the Paul Miller Racing number 48 car is on 303 points, and the number 86 Meyer Shank Racing, the Catherine Legg car, is on 297 points. That is a 6-point gap, which is large, but based on the recent form of those two cars, recent being VIR and Laguna Seca, It would appear that the number 86 car has the legs to possibly take this championship win. There were comments made by Brian Sellers, driver for the number 48, that he didn't feel that they were in the right spot anymore. It was something along the lines of, well, if they perform like this again at Road Atlanta, there's nothing anyone can do. So it's a very interesting mental state that that kind of expresses at the moment, because it feels like the number 48 is struggling in terms of the way that the team is operating at the moment. And it's only in the very recent times. Like, they took second place at Road America and they won at Lime Rock. So it's only very recently that they've had this downturn in morale. So it could be very interesting heading into this final round to see how the pressure is on the two different teams. Because I would say at the moment that the pressure is all on the number 48 to not mess this up. They have a 6-point gap, which means that even if Catherine Legg wins in the 86, they can still finish third and win the championship. And if the number 86 isn't able to win, they have much more of a buffer. They can finish as far down as, let me just quickly do the maths, they can finish as far down as fifth if the 86 finishes second. And I mean, okay, the GTD class might be one of the most hotly contested classes at the moment, but there is still quite a bit of room, a wiggle room for them, provided that the number 86 car isn't destroying the entire field. And with the quality of the field at the moment, I'd be hard pressed to say that the 86 is a surefire win. But yeah, it looks like with the way that the morale is heading at the moment, that it's all Paul Miller Racing's championship to lose, and all eyes will be on them to make sure that they don't lose it. So that's the championship picture at the moment for Petit Le Mans. As far as the Endurance Cup goes, I'm going to be entirely honest. I have no idea how they score points. If you look at the point sheet, it's just a row of twos and threes, and it's just like, it makes no sense. I will definitely be watching with close eyes on the two championship battles. If I had to put my money on it at this stage, I will say that I am picking Core and I am picking Catherine Legg. I think both of those cars are looking like they are in the best position to capitalize on a recent run of very good results. And if that continues at Road Atlanta, we could see a P2, International P2, overall win in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship, and we could also see for the third year in succession a female winner of the GTD class, which would put a massive exclamation mark on that championship yet again. So that's the championship picture. Coming up after this little interlude, we will be checking out the ELMS race at Spa and the WC at Fuji. And welcome back to this episode of Endurance Chat. Now we're going to be moving on to the ELMS at Spa-Francorchamps. And joining me for the rest of the episode, I have Bujok. Welcome back to the show, Bujok.
Oh, yeah, ELM again. Has been a while.
Yeah. So, ELMS at Spa-Francorchamps. You were going to go to this race, but what happened?
Wayne and a lot of it.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I'd describe it as well. Didn't they actually change the timetable of the race to try and avoid the rain as well? Or am I just misremembering?
Yeah, they moved it 2 hours ahead to avoid the rain. And that's exactly the 2 hours they won. So,
wow. Okay. Well, I mean, I guess you could call that foresight. But even the running with heavy inverted commas there that they got in wasn't a lot of green flag, was it? I think they only got around 20 minutes of actual green flag running in for the entire race.
Well, I think it was more. I think it was at least an hour, to be sure. I think it was even more than that.
I'll be honest.
A fair bit.
I'll be honest, I wasn't paying super close attention to this because I was just like, it's raining sideways. They're just not going to get anywhere. And I mean, after 2 hours, they called the race after half distance, basically. And they only completed 40 laps in 2 hours of Spa-Francorchamps. Like, that tells you just how atrocious the conditions were. Because it was just atrocious conditions, wasn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't that good.
Mm,
it was good racing, though. First part.
Yeah.
And party actually went.
I mean, I was having a great time until the high-class racing car went in the wall, because they're one of my favorite teams, and that made me angry. And then there was the big leading P3 group that all ran off the wall, ran off the road. I think it was actually the leading car at the time. Was it the ultimate car that went, speared off of the wall? Speared off into the wall, rather, coming out of Puhon.
Could be, remember... Not that good. I think it was second. There was the pole sitting car. They were second at the time.
Okay.
If I remember correctly.
Yep. And I mean, with the conditions the way that they were, it was always an expectation that someone was going to go off, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's pretty normal, especially at Spa, because you just get it wrong and then you get it more wrong. And,
and it just compounds. Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of compounding, the championship leaders of the day, the G-Drive car for, I think this is number 26, they actually had a bit of an incident themselves, didn't they?
Yeah, I think we can best describe it as G-Drive being G-Drive. That's how I see it.
Yeah, we've gone...
It happened in 15, and also in 16 and 17, and
yeah. They've gone from we've gone from being Frenchies being Frenchies to now G Drive being G Drive. So yeah, but what actually happened? So like from what I remember, it was the two P2 cars coming into the bus stop, and they were trying to pass. Was it the Proton car? I feel like it was the Proton car.
Well, the G Drive car tried to pass the was the first set of the Corsa car. At least the Dallara. What's the name for a minute? Tried to pass it, didn't really look out of his window. We didn't see the Proton Porsche hit that one. At least the Proton Porsche hit the Dallara, so I think he tried to overtake another car.
At least the Porsche hit the Dallara. I'm pretty sure it was the IDEX Sport Ligier, I think. That got tagged, but yeah, just kind of sent the Porsche just off into the grass, and once it was in the grass, it had absolutely no grip, and it was like, okay, we'll see you at the bus stop, and unfortunately, it ran into another car, and both of those cars ended up finishing many laps down on their competition, which was a bit of a shame, especially for that Porsche, which has been the class of the GT field all season. But there wasn't really too much else you could say about this race, really. It was just, there was so much rain and so much caution that even the short amount of racing we did see was kind of marred by these incidents, weren't they?
Yeah, but I have to say I still enjoyed it. I don't know if you watch it that much. Maybe it was also enjoyable because the Discord was pretty fun.
Yeah, I was in the Discord and having a bit of fun. But I remember I think I was watching another event at the same time. I can't remember what it was, but I was watching something else. So that probably meant that I didn't really pay as much attention to it as I should have, which is bad for me. But anyway, there is still a few stories that came out from this event. Most notably, the first win for United Autosports in the Ligier, I think, ever? Is that the first Ligier P2 win since Ligier, the new P2 system?
Didn't they win the race last year? I thought there was that... Maybe was it at the tire race? Yeah, United Autosport won at Silverstone last year. Also at the Red Bull Ring.
Okay, so it's okay. So not the first win for Elijah ever, but still the first win.
I think
win...
it was the first for Phil Hansen.
Yes.
He's the youngest winner now.
I think it's so, because Phil Hansen's what, like 18 or 19 or something ridiculous?
I think he was 19.
Yeah. So, yeah, first win for Phil Hansen, youngest winner in the ELMS ever, which that's pretty cool. And especially after the year that United Autosports has had, for them to get that sort of result was pretty cool. But what do you notice, if Trevor Vasaurus was here, he'd be loving this, what do you notice about the results for the Spa race in terms of the tyre compounds?
I thought Michelin was pretty competitive. Yep. Well, at least Michelin won, because United Autosports switched to them.
Yep.
For this race.
And good call too. The top six cars in P2 were on Michelins. Six.
Didn't know there was that many.
Yeah.
I don't remember the results that well. It has been a while since we watched that race.
But yeah, the top six cars, which just again goes to show that the Michelin, they make a wet tire. They know how to make a wet tire, and they don't know how to make it a good wet tire. And that's something that they just beat everyone else at. And that's been the same for even the old P2s as well. Yeah, you were saying?
It wasn't also, I think it was last year, I think at Fuji. Yeah, I don't know if you remember, it was Clearwater Racing, Kitasawa, because he had a lot of experience at the track in the rain, was faster than most of the GTE Pro guys at the time.
Yeah, because he was also on Michelin's as well.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive.
Yep. So if you want to be fast and it's raining, just slap a set of Michelin's on it and it'll be a good time. But it's crazy. It's crazy that no one else has really caught up on that. Like, Dunlop has been providing tires now for 5 or 6 seasons for LMP2, and they still can't make a wet tire that's anywhere close to anything that Michelin can produce, which I think is crazy. What do you think?
It is crazy, but wasn't the first time I think I noticed was it 15 at Shanghai, Brundle, who was also on Michelin's then?
Yep.
Went away from the field until it dried.
Yeah, and as soon as it dried, they had no answer for anyone else. As you do. Anyway, what that does leave us with, though, is an interesting championship in LMP2. Unfortunately, the full championship has now already been decided. There is no way that G-Drive Racing can lose the championship, I think. Yeah, there's no way that G-Drive can lose the championship. Because, of course, the ELMS race only went to half distance. They only awarded half points. And with that, it meant that the Race Engineering's, 8th place? 7th place. Is not enough for them to get close enough to challenge in the last round of the season at Algarve. So, yeah, G-Drive have won the season, which everyone kind of knew or, well, expected to happen already, right?
Yeah, they were really fast, especially with, was it again, Pizzatola?
Pizzatola, yeah.
You say it like that?
Yeah. So much for a silver, like, right? And
well, they will answer, well, it is a silver, so...
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he is a silver, but he shouldn't be. He really shouldn't be. I think it's just crazy that G-Drive took 3 wins in a row, and that really just sort of pulled them away from everyone else. I mean, they won at Monza, they won at Red Bull, and they won at Silverstone. So, just crazy consistency, which is kind of nuts, to be honest.
Yeah, and on the other hand, not that surprising, because, well, they raced in the WEC, and they won a lot there too, so they must be good.
Yeah. On that, though, it actually confirms their spot at Le Mans next year. So, of course, winner of the ELMS gets an invite to Le Mans. And so, yeah, G-Drive is now the first team that has a confirmed spot at Le Mans, which is also pretty cool. I think that's what Rusinov was really aiming for. So, yeah, good on them, I guess. You can tell how thrilled I am by this, can't you?
Yeah, you're like, why?
Yeah. Oh.
That's like a farmer with dude pain.
Okay.
Little translation of a saying we have here. I didn't really.
Interesting though, the battle for second for that second automatic entry to the Le Mans, that's looking really, really tight at the moment. With the Haas points situation, we actually have Race Engineering and IDEX Sport on the same points heading into the last round of the season. And we know how crazy the last round of the season can be when things aren't decided before they get into that round, don't we? You remember last year? Was it last year or the year before where we had three teams that were in the championship hunt all have problems and break down on the last round of the series?
I think that was 16.
Yeah, I think
it was GMW, which
and
blew up.
And Thierry by TDS also had a problem.
Electrical problems.
Yep.
And LMP3 would just won, I think, because it was the car with bundle.
Yeah, because they'd already confirmed the championship and they broke down as well. Just to compound everything.
Yeah, there was, I think it was a crash. Well, was it with a teammate? I don't know. I don't remember it that well.
That's all good. That's
too much racing to remember everything.
This is true. This is why we have YouTube. IDEX Sport and Race Engineering, who do you reckon is the team that's most likely going to get that that second place for the championship? Who do you think?
Well, if I had to guess, Racing Engineering, because they had a retirement and they have already won once, so they seem to know how to win and get a good result. And IDEX Sport has been really consistent, but not seem to be good enough. So
I would tend to agree with you as well. Especially, I've been really, really impressed by Norman Nato and the Race Engineering car. And they were the lead car on Dunlop's at Spa. So that certainly bodes well if it stays dry at Portimao, which is the last race of the season, which will be coming up. When is that coming up? In later this month is the finale. So keep an eye for that. And Dragon Speed isn't too far away either. Yeah.
Yeah, last weekend of October. Just Portimao.
Yep.
So the 28th.
Yes. LMP3 as well has a very, very tight championship tussle for second place. Now, United Autosports actually took the win in that class as well, which I think has been their first win in LMP3 this year as well. So good weekend for United.
Yeah, I have the results here. They were also first at Silverstone, but it was the other car.
Yeah, that
was
the
first win for the number two.
Yep.
But the number three needed to win more because they're in second, they're in third place, 1 point behind second.
Yeah. And it will be really, really close heading into this last round. I mean, RLR M Sport with the 360 racing car having a decent result. But RLR M Sport have been the car that's been sort of the class car all year. So they've got a 14-point buffer, which sounds not that much, but that's like five or six places, I think. If 360 Racing win, RLR M Sport only have to finish fifth or sixth to win the championship. But yeah, the battle for second between 360 and United is going to go down to the wire. It'll be interesting to see how that all goes. Again, if you had to
think, RLR will.
You think RLR
will probably win? Yeah, I think they will probably win.
Yep.
It's because they have good results, and if they don't break down or crash, I think they will win.
Yep.
I think they're good enough, even though maybe they won't win the race. 360. Racing don't have followed the team that much in the years before, I believe.
Yep.
And they haven't won yet this season, so I don't know how they will perform when they're in the lead. Because sometimes you see some drivers who just can't handle the pressure for some reason and not follow leading.
Yep.
And United Autosport have won, so
yeah. It'll be very close. If I had to pick, I'd probably pick United at this stage. But we don't know. The last round of the season can throw up some pretty crazy stuff. And yeah, as you said, when the pressure's on and you're in the lead, you don't know exactly what's going to happen, do you?
Yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully that sort of gets a bit more of the spotlight, because I've been saying for most of the season that it just with the amount of cars in P2, it has been quite difficult to actually follow LMP3 unless you're actually like taking down pages and pages of the notes about everything that happens, because it just kind of flies under the radar, which is a bit of a shame. But anyway, moving on to GTE. And yeah, as we mentioned, the big story was the Proton competition car getting wrapped up in that incident with the G-Drive car. And also the Crone Racing car not making it to the finish. Now, because of those two things, it's meant that the Proton car, one of the Proton cars is way out in the lead by 11 points. So they're
11 and a half,
yeah. So they're almost certainly, I say almost certainly, but again, last round of the season, don't know what could happen, confirmed for a Le Mans spot. But the second place between JMW and Spirit of Race is, again, only 2 points separating the two, and that is a battle that would be titanic if it came down to it, don't you think?
Yeah, I think they both still have a shot at a championship. Like, I know you're a fan of Porsches, but
yeah,
I think we have seen this year and last year Porsches gone up a fire. Last round of the season, I think about 16.
Stop. Why are you saying these things? Prajak, why are you saying these things?
Because it can happen.
I mean, yeah, but
before we know it, both Ferraris blow up and they cruise. So
yeah,
you don't know what will happen.
But. Yeah, exactly. Who knows? So out of JMW and Spirit of Race, who do you reckon will take the points for second place?
That's a hard one.
Yeah,
I would say. JMW.
I would agree. I reckon it would be JMW. But just a quick shout out to EBI Motors, who took their maiden victory for the ELMS at Spa-Francorchamps. And they're locked in a pretty tight competition with the second Proton Porsche for that fourth place. Only half a point separating the two. And yeah, they have been really impressive this season, stepping up for the Michelin Le Mans Cup into a full season drive. So yeah, good stuff, EBR Motors.
They really have been, because they only finished once, not on the podium, and that's when they retired.
Exactly right. I still don't know why they retired from that race. They completed the race distance and then didn't cross the finish line. I don't know. It was weird. Never got to the bottom of that. So yeah, had that not been the case, they could have had a full year of podiums, which would have been very impressive for their first year in the ELMS. Any last things did you want to say on the ELMS before we move along to Fuji?
Well, I think we covered everything, except maybe that the Quant car for once wasn't at fault when they spun.
For once in its life, it wasn't at fault. Yeah, that one time, it's used up all its luck for the entirety of its existence.
I guess they want to save it for Le Mans, but they already used it.
Yeah, fair enough. So Fuji. Firstly, I do want to say thank you for everyone who joined the 2016 Fuji 6-Hour Rewatch. That's one of my favorite WEC races, and what a race as well. Thank you to the people who watched it. Thank you to James Muscat, who put the timing data in for us, because watching the timing screen again at the end of the race was giving me mad flashbacks, and it was really, really cool to be able to do that again. And yeah, hopefully we get a race of a similar caliber, which we could potentially with some news that's filtered out through the week. Firstly, the fact that there's a full brand new equivalence of technology for this week in LMP1. What's happened is that the governing body has gone to Toyota and gone, hey, we're going to make this more fair for everyone, so we're going to impose sanctions on you, which they actually had to get Toyota's permission to do, because there was a stipulation of the rules that they could not make any adjustments to the Toyota for this season. So it's getting a bunch of weight. So it's getting 26 kilos and also less fuel. So what are your thoughts? That's a lot. That's a lot to go in on one go.
I thought they also the same fueling time?
Yeah, so they also
changed that.
Yeah, Toyota? They're losing their stint advantage. And I'm not sure about the pit time, but it has been said, the article that I'm reading from Sportscar 365 says that the non-hybrids are getting a larger fuel restrictor, as in a larger aperture in the fuel restrictor. So we could see, pit refueling times also be the same as well.
A lot has changed.
Yeah.
And I don't know what will happen, because I think a lot of us, not before Silverstone, like, well, it's going to be close now because I've gotten a big break and everything. And we saw in qualifying, they got pretty close, but then there was the waves and... You know how that is with the hybrids, and the other one just normal power, and traffic, and all falls apart. Because I even think, even if they might be faster than Toyota in qualifying, even if they are 2 seconds faster, I still think Toyota will win in the end anyway.
Really? Even if it's that much of a gap?
Because all of the time, the Toyotas will win in traffic.
That's a good point. And
you saw what happened in 16.
Yeah. Exactly
because,
right.
I think Kobayashi lost a light 4 seconds in one lap. So suddenly the Audi was wider behind him. And if that happens in a race, and they just creep away. And then when they get a clear lap, they don't take 2 seconds out of them. But that will not be enough. Because how many laps?
Oh, Silverstone. Yeah, they won by four laps at the end.
Yeah. So even... if they were 2 seconds a lap slower, because now they were like the private was like a second slower.
Mm.
And in the end it was four laps.
That's a really good point.
So
I wonder if we might actually see the privateers take pole position, and then especially because if the Toyota's gotten 26 kilos, that's a lot of mass to be lugging around. I wonder if a privateer might actually have a shot at pole position this time around. Do you reckon it's possible?
Well, it's a hard thing to say, because I also watch Super GT, and sometimes a team, even with a lot of weight and a fuel restrictor, just still put in the time which way faster than the rest. And what did he get? 28 kilos?
28 kilos.
Like with the gap? With the gap they had, look. Because they even gave the Ford in DTE 18 kilos.
Yeah, that was the next thing we were going to...
And the Ferrari doesn't change at all. So that's 18 kilos. And then Toyota get 26. That doesn't really waste my hopes that much.
Okay.
If I'm honest.
So do you still think it will be a Toyota 1-2?
For the race?
Yep.
Yes, qualifying. They might get a shot also because Fuji has long straights, so that's an advantage to the privateers. So they might have a shot at pole, but further than that,
It'll be interesting. Hopefully we see something that's a little more equal. I mean, it doesn't have to be perfect, but something that's a little more equal would just make the show just a bit more enjoyable and maybe give a bit more weight to the privateer battle between SMP and Rebellion, which has been actually quite awesome throughout the season, if I do say so myself. Would you agree?
What a battle... Did you see? I missed it.
The battle between SMP and Rebellion for privateer honors.
Yeah, that one will be interesting to follow. Especially because SMP seems to be getting better and better while they get used to racing in WEC. So, looking forward to it. But I also especially expect probably number one Rebellion be pretty strong, especially in qualifying. Because Neil Gianni knows the track well, and Andre, well, I mean, he's pretty fast, and Lotte knows the track really well, because he also raced in Japan for years.
So Super that, Formula,
that
right?
That car will be pretty strong, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. With that in mind, who do you reckon will come out on top out of the privateers?
If I had to guess, I would, I think, still say Rebellion.
Still
say Rebellion. I think the one.
Yep. I was going to say the one as well, yeah. The fact that Jenson Button's sitting in the number 11 might give that car a shot as well. Because remember, Jenson Button has a massive driving pedigree and fan base in Fuji and in Japan as well.
The US is now there as well. So he knows the track even better than before. So I expect that car to be fast, at least following the Rebellion for a lot of the race. I still think they won't make it in the end. Like also at Silverstone, they were fast, but it just didn't have that little bit of an edge they needed.
And the thing,
I don't think it's strategy or managing the tires. Or...
So yeah, still still very intriguing, especially with this EOT change. We could see for the first time a privateer win on merit, which would be a bit funny at Toyota's home track, but we'll see how we go. Now, you made mention of some BOP changes to GTE, the Ford getting an 18-kilo increase, the BMW getting a 20-kilo decrease, plus some added turbo pressure, and some more fuel, whereas the Porsche as well has lost some fuel, gained a little bit of weight, only 2 kilos, and has a smaller air restrictor. So we should see a varied smattering of results in GT then as well, don't you think?
Well, I expect Collado to still be complaining.
His car didn't even get changed.
Yeah, I know. It was the previous race, I think, as well. But he just keeps complaining. I really liked the guy before, but I don't know. I started to dislike him a lot, actually.
Yeah.
Because he wins, he complains. He's second, he complains. He retires, he complains. Like, if you don't like this kind of racing, then move along. Just terminate your Ferrari contract, go race for an LMP2 team or something.
And damn. Don't complain anymore. Just... pulling no punches. Yeah, but I agree with you as well. It is just a little bit grating. But with all these changes then, who do you think will have the speed? Because we saw at Silverstone, what was it? That it was very much the Ferrari in the end, pardon me, that was the team to beat. Come the end of the race, Ferrari and Ford, it turned out being, with a little bit of Porsche thrown in. So with these changes to move the Ford further back, maybe with that extra extra weight, and bring the BMW up with less weight and more boost, where do you think it's all going to play out?
If the Fords don't have a lot of tire trouble, I think they will still win. Because you have to remember, there's a car that is designed for Le Mans and sweeping corners. Well, Pretty has that. So probably also why they got that big of adjustment in terms of ballast.
Yeah, and remember, this is using the automatic BOP system. This isn't using, like, humans making those changes. This is a massive... I think this is the biggest change we've ever seen using the automatic computerized BOP system. So, yeah, I find it interesting that you think the Fords are still going to be close. But now that you've said that, I reckon you might be right. Yeah, because this is where they took their first win outside of Le Mans as well.
And they always have been stronger, so...
Exactly.
I expect them to do well. I don't know if you watch ways in like Super DT or all the ways series that work with ballast.
No.
Sometimes you see, even though they have ballast, just win anyway. I think it was 15 or something. I think Nissan and a GT200 class and Super GT won with 86 kilo of ballast, something like that.
Wow, 86 kilos of ballast. Damn. That's a lot of ballast. That's like an entire human.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, it's heavier than I am, so.
Yeah. Heavier than me as well. So, do you reckon the BMWs are going to be competitive?
Well, I hope them to be, at least. Mm. If they are, I don't know. If I could compare the BOPs from IMSA to WEC, I might get a little bit of a better idea. And now I don't really know. I would say they should be. But this is a big car, and it's Fuji.
Yeah.
With long straights. I don't know how efficient they are on the straights. So maybe they even need that to even be close.
Well, fingers crossed that they do. Fingers crossed the Aston Martin didn't need to get any changes. Because that would... because if they're way off the pace again, then I think Aston Martin can just write off this season and forget about it. But interestingly, I'm just going to have a quick look towards the weather forecast for the weekend, because if we do get some rain...
I just looked it up. Yeah, there is forecast some rain, but it's not completely sure, but it is Fuji. It can happen and it cannot happen. Like, okay. In that regard, it's a little bit like Spa. There might be rain, there might not be rain, but we'll see.
Well, fingers crossed. I am seeing on my forecast a little bit of rain forecast for Saturday. So we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes. Now, finally,
I see Wayne looks for Sunday.
Okay.
6 a.m. and most of it seems to be before the race, so we might start with a wet track and then dice if the forecast is correct.
Well, fingers crossed then we don't get too much rain during the race, because when we get rain during the race here, it tends to stop the race. Thinking back to last year, thinking back to 2013 as well. So fingers crossed that we don't get that sort of thing. Now, one thing that has come about in the last few weeks is the fact that there has been a change to the entry list for the 6 Hours of Fuji. And it's basically what everyone sort of feared. The Ginetta, the sole entered Ginetta for that race, has now been withdrawn from the entry list. So we're going to be running sans Ginetta for the next round of the season in Fuji. So this is now what, the second race in a row that neither of the cars has turned up. Be honest. Do you think that we'll see those cars in competition again this season?
The only place I might expect them to see is maybe at Le Mans again. And that's it. I think they might arrange something with the ACO and FIA that they can test their car for a couple of more months to make it better, and then try again at Le Mans, and then try to sell it and hope they can still use and sell it after the hypercar rules will come eventually, they say. Like, they're really late with that, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, in my opinion as well. But yeah, I think you're right with regards to Ginetta. I think it's unlikely that we'll see them again until Le Mans, even if they do end up at Le Mans, to be honest. Which is really, really disappointing because there was so much fanfare and so much excitement about that program. And for it to kind of end the way it has is really, really not great, to be honest.
Yeah, this is a little sad.
Mm.
Yeah, not much we can do about it. This,
exactly.
From the beginning, it was a little bit like, I don't know. It didn't sound that great. There were always the little stories. We were thinking like, well, I don't know. And then we had that show car, which wasn't really a car or something along those lines. So.
Yeah, it just kind of seems that every sort of step that you've seen from this program, it's kind of gone a bit, you know, worse and worse and worse. So fingers crossed they get the money behind them to bring that car out again at some point. Fingers crossed the new engine suits the car. Fingers crossed they're able to get a car to a race meeting. But honestly, I'm not holding out too many hopes at all. Are you?
No, me neither.
Yeah.
No.
Okay, with all this in mind, what's going to happen? Who's going to win?
Well, I guess the 7 will win this race.
Yep, and...
Because I think if I remember also the last couple of years, the 7 seemed to be faster in this race. Last year as well. Well, he got a little bit screwed in the end, and I think the 8 won. But... still think the 7 was stronger at the time, and it was a lot of races last year as well. And this year they also didn't really have been slower. So I will guess they take this one.
Cool.
Because also I don't know how much time Alonso needs to switch back and forward also mentally, because he has an advantage that he already is in Japan because of Formula 1. But it's also, how much time does it take to switch? Does he normally go in the simulator before he goes to the track to get himself into the rhythm? So I'm curious how that's got out. He's really good, so he might do really well, but I'm still curious how that will play out.
That's a very interesting thought. Yeah, good point. I wonder how that does play out for him. We haven't really talked about LMP2 at all. We see at the moment in the championship, and we did finally get a result from Le Mans, the decision from Le Mans to remove the G-Drive car from the results was upheld in the end. So congratulations on Alpine winning at Le Mans. But in terms of LMP2, we have Alpine... now on the top step of the championship. Is that right? These can't be the right results. Anyway, we're just going to continue on. It's saying Alpine at the top, followed by JCDC, the two JCDC cars. So who do you reckon has the ascendancy coming into the Asian leg of the championship in Fuji?
If I think also about last year, and also look a little bit at the results this year, I think GCDC is a little bit stronger.
Okay.
Than Alpine.
In that case, just to be different, I'm going to go Alpine for the win. Because can't all just pick JCDC.
I still have to guess which ones of the GCDC cars will win.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like, after last race, I expect the 37 to do well again.
37. So that's the Malaysia. Yeah,
they were
car,
leading.
Right?
Yeah, I think they have mostly silvers.
Yes, I think they're all silver except for Jafar. See, I'm still so confused about how quick they were last round. It just was mind boggling to me. Couldn't wrap my head.
Really walked the floor with the rest of the field.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what they did.
Yeah, I just couldn't wrap my head around it. It was nuts. So if they do that again, then I will eat a big old thing of humble pie. Okay, GT, who do you reckon is going to win GT?
I would think I would say, think the 60. Well, I will go with the 67. They need a good result.
So like, so sticking with Ford?
Way behind.
Okay. So you're sticking with Ford then?
Like, they retired. They had a 12th place. And then they had finally a second at Silverstone. But I think they might get a good result. Like, they have 20 points, or like 51 points behind the leading Porsche. And 37 points behind their own teammates. So I think they want a good result. And I think they won first for Ford at Fuji also. So I think they will do really well.
Cool.
Regardless of that extra weight.
Okay. That's very interesting, because I would have thought that sort of weight penalty would have more, but I guess we'll see. I am actually going to go with Porsche, especially if there is a bit of weather around. I think the Porsches will come into their own and be really strong, but it'll be interesting to see how big of an effect the new BOP has on the final results, especially with the Ford getting more weight and the BMW losing a lot of weight. Finally, GTEM. Let's talk GTEM. Who do you reckon in GTEM it has the best shot?
Well, I think if it's going to rain, then I would say Clearwater. Especially if we see some rain. Because like how fast Saal was last year, it didn't really plan out for him, if I remember correctly, but how fast he was then. And we'll again see some rain. And I think the car will do really well.
Okay, cool. See, normally the answer when you hear a little bit of rain around is just go straight to the Porsche, though.
But this Sawa, who is the driver, and I think he was also a driver instructor at Fuji. So he's, I think, the most experienced guy at the track. And last year he was faster than some guys at GTE Pro. In a DTM car in the wet, so
yeah, I think they got caught out by the safety car.
That's why I think that car will do well.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm going to be a little different, and I'm going to say the number 77 Dempsey Proton car, because that Dempsey Proton. Well, yeah, this car. Sorry, Fuji was where Patrick Dempsey actually got his first WEC win. So, if the Dempsey Proton car is going to do well anywhere, it's going to do well at Fuji. That's my call.
Well, I expect them to win. If it keeps completely dry, I expect them to win. And it has to rain a lot. I think to have Clearwater have a shot, because they didn't have the best of seasons till now. So, but if we see rain and not the light rain, then I think Clearwater will do well.
Cool.
There's a little bit, how well will Wang Tseng Wong do then, but with Matt Griffin in the car and Saul, who has a lot of experience at that track, also in the wet, then I think that car will really swung.
Interesting. I'm interested in that. Cool. So yeah, Fuji of course is this weekend. It is an hour after Petit Le Mans finishes, so there will be 17 hours of sports car action to digest. Yay. Jesus, that's good. That's
I
a
think
lot.
I called it in the Discord at one point when somebody asked, 17 hours of destruction. So
yeah, probably.
Like, I don't have sleep. Like, this European time, it's like Fuji starts at 4 a.m. and Petit ends at 3 a.m. So
See, for me, this is actually at a relatively normal time. I think for me, Petit starts at like 1 in the morning, and then I'll... and then finishes at about 10 or 11, and then Fuji starts immediately after that. So for me, it's actually a good right in the slot. But the thing is, of course, I'll be on night shift, so I won't even be able to watch any of it after all that.
Yeah, your work is sometimes like it is. Sometimes it's a boon, like you can watch everything, and all the way sometimes just like, damn.
Yeah, exactly. Like everything, watching Bathurst last weekend was perfect because I'd finished all my work before the weekend started and I got to watch everything. But no, not this weekend. Oh well. And did you have anything else you wanted to add right at the very end?
Well, I'm still interested to see how it will plan out in the end in NFP 1. I just made a quick calculation, and I think on terms of pace from qualifying, I guess the Toyota should have been 2 laps ahead, and in the end they were 4.
Yep.
So if there's a 2 second swing, and I don't know how it will translate to Fuji, but if it does seem so, the privateers will be fast in qualifying, then we might have a race, but I really don't know.
Fingers crossed.
I don't know how, we'll see. I don't know if 26 kilos will be enough.
Wow, okay.
Might be harder on the tires. That might be another little drive. Could also be a disadvantage now then think of it for the privateers, because they're lighter. The tires are not only made for four-wheel drive cars, but also for heavier cars.
Yeah, all these little delicate, intricate systems playing into each other. It'll certainly be something. So definitely worth watching or keeping track of at the very least. And I think that brings us to the end. Thank you very much to Cookie, who helped us out with the IMSA stuff. And thank you very much, Bujok. Welcome back to doing this podcast. It has been a while, so I'm glad to have you back.
I'm glad to be back too. It was fun. So
yeah,
that's why we do this.
Exactly. And it's, yeah, good to get all this different insight. And thank you very much for listening. And yeah, we'll see you around this weekend. Hope you enjoy. Peace out.
Bye.
Why do we always do? SRO is just one of those weird things. It's kind of like the evil empire of GT3 racing.
No, they're just like they're like a potential cancer cells, but they're not cancerous yet. They're just like,
they're benign.
Yeah, they're like, but it's benign cancer. It's like, all right, we just keep it in check, make sure nothing happens to it, make sure it doesn't get too big.
It's benign. 9.5. Scrubs. Anyone? Scrubs?